what we're seeing real? Does it matter? Did it ever? Find out on Haunted MTL's High Art Camp with contributors Parzival, J.M. Brannick, and a special guest.
Welcome to High Art Camp. This is a podcast. This is the end-all be-all to see if a movie can indeed call itself art. I am your host and highly awarded art critic, J.M. Brannick, a.k.a. Box Human, with my other host and highly awarded art critic, Parzival. Please wave to the people, Parz.
Hi.
You can wave a little louder.
Hello.
We are two mega giants at the top of our game, coming to your inexperienced, inept baby ears to settle once and for all. Is this art? Joining us today is guest mega super art critic Court Court. Want to say hi?
Hi. Hello.
Court Court comes with the skills and background in English literature, criminal justice, and interest in dystopias, slashers, and folk horrors. Welcome to the show, Court Court.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this is our third episode. This episode was chosen by Parz. This is 2001's Bully by Larry Clark. Do you want to tell us a little bit of why you chose this one? Please do.
I chose... So I watched this one for the first time, a few weeks ago. And after watching it, we start with, it's basically about the true story of a murder done by a group of kids. And just the way that it was directed, I really needed to talk to somebody to see if I'm completely off my rocker or if there is some merit to this film.
Okay. Okay. That's one way to put it. Okay. So let's first discuss the plot a little bit of this movie, which not even Wikipedia is coherent about. So I wrote in my notes, I'm not even taking notes about this section. I'm just going to do it from memory.
Yeah.
There are spoilers in this, just FYI. Yeah. And just FYI, I am probably going to be short about this part of the themes in the movie because I felt like they were short, the themes in the movie. I mean, the movie was long. Oh God, don't get me wrong. Movie was long. Okay. So Parz, let's talk a little bit about the movie and Court Court too. Come on in. We open up to the first line, the greatest line in any movie, which is about sucking his long, hard dick, I think it was, or cock.
I think it was just suck my dick. Yeah.
I think there was an adjective thrown in there, hard or long or I don't know, pristine.
Yeah, it was a lot.
We don't great know opener. Who he's like talking it. To.
Mm-hmm. No.
We never
find
out
either.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is just our introduction to our main character.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Very he could have been talking to Bobby for all we know.
He could have.
For all we know. Could have been talking to somebody else.
Yeah.
He could have been ordering pizza. We don't fucking know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the point.
Okay. So we get into it.
Oh boy.
We have our main character. I didn't write down his name. We have Bobby, which is also was misspelled in something. Court mentioned showed that as Booby.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to. I just want to kind of call him Booby now.
Yeah, that's his name now.
So Booby is Stan, Larry,
Marty.
Marty.
Yes, Marty is the kid that we opened with, and then Bobby is the other. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're supposed best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long
supposedly.
Time.
Supposedly. Yeah, like since childbirth, maybe, like really long, but they're what's his face's Booby's parents don't like what Marty's becoming because Marty is a surfer.
Yeah,
god damn those surfers.
going nowhere in life
nowhere, absolutely. And as I don't even know their fucking names, other guy Booby points out, it is a way of life. but we don't have anything to expand on that. It just is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then there are these girls, and they come around, and one is more provocative than the other, and they decide to go with these boys, and suddenly they're fucking each other in a car,
mm-hmm.
as friends do with other friends. You know, again, it's just, it's...
I feel like you're having problems with that.
I am. I'm not having problems with that. I'm having problems overall with the movie. But anyway, you know, the funny thing is there was a lot of critics that were critiquing it for its sexuality.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the thing that bugged me so much. Part of the thing that bugged me so much is that what 20-year-old is so fucking comfortable with their body that they're like, hey, best friend, let me fuck in front of you. With this other guy and his best friend.
Okay.
And let me walk around naked in my house with my mom around and let my dad come up to me and have a full fucking conversation with me totally naked. Yeah.
Okay.
Nah.
Yeah. Can I touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So I would have to argue back that I would say a lot of what you're saying there with, you know, the camera shots along the body. The girl, the character is walking around naked, laying down in bed naked. I would have to say that's an artistic choice and not necessarily something that actually happened, part of this true story. I'm not sure. Maybe that did. But as far as the friends fucking in a scene, I think that's a little bit separate than the body shots or the girls walking around naked. You know, we have the men without shirts, sort of like a touch on, we think we're okay with our sexuality, or we think these people are comfortable with their sexuality, when in fact, that's not really the case. And over the course of the movie, the way the camera is shot sort of changes.
I think everybody's okay with their sexuality except for gay sexuality. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, I think, a little bit. Court, what happens next?
So, all right, so what part are we at? We're at...
who the fuck knows?
They're in the car, and then, what's her face? The redhead? Lisa, I think, she has her friend Allie come over, and Booby, basically, he rapes Allie. And Lisa, like, doesn't really believe her at first. And then eventually she comes around. And then there are, like, other scenes that kind of build up. What's his face? I can't remember any of their names either now. Marty, he, like, tells Lisa about his relationship with Bobby and how, like, Bobby basically has just, like, always been abusive. And then Lisa finds out she's pregnant sometime along the way. And then Marty gets really pissed and gives her these, like, severe bruises, which were really upsetting to me, honestly, because they kind of, like, dropped that after a while and then, like, kind of made him the victim again.
What do you think about that, Pars?
I think that the director was trying to say too much when he shouldn't have. I think he should have stayed a little bit more focused.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There is so much and yet so little going
on. Yeah, I feel,
Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
Nope, you're good.
Okay. I mean, do you want to take it, Pars?
I mean.
Oh, my God. That's me, and I'm sorry.
Basically, you just follow these.
Fucking Kristen Cleaves. Fucking LJ Lewis. These assholes. Just wanted to put that out there. They're people we work with. Don't go read their reviews. They're really good. Don't do it. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, Pars. Go ahead.
I was just saying that I think the rest of the movie, just follow these dumb kids. We follow these dumb kids making decisions without realizing the repercussions of their decisions, how the implications, how much this can affect. Like, you know, you have these kids that plot this murder of another kid, a kid in the group.
And they talk about it incessantly, but not in an interesting way. Just like, we're gonna do this thing. Oh, that's cool. Let's get high. All right, now we're gonna do this thing. That's cool. Let's get high.
So I'm gonna assume neither of you have been a part of a conversation like that. or with people like that, a group have friends like that.
That want to kill people?
Right. For example.
I can't say.
She pleads the fifth. I don't have any friends, Pars, so no.
You're asking a lot for us. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, that would explain some things as well. That's all.
I didn't have friends like these.
Okay.
But I didn't really have friends.
Right.
There's a reason why. I'm an asshole. Yes. So basically these kids, they, and we say kids loosely because some of them are young adults in their 20s.
Yeah.
But it's very loose, this movie. With the
young.
The story, I mean, there's a lot of video game, not a lot of video game playing, but like just in this culture. And so then they finally do get around to killing this other guy, Booby, Bobby. And it goes pretty messy. It doesn't go quite as according to plan as they wanted it to. And
like you can imagine a kid's plotting a murder would go.
Like high kids plotting a murder. Yeah. Very, very high kids plotting a murder. Does not go well. Imagine that. And then they start freaking out and it unravels very quickly after that.
Yeah, they're telling everyone.
Telling everybody. Postman.
Like a kid. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, hey, go move this body with me. I don't think we buried it really well.
It's like, do you want to be my friend? Like, I killed somebody.
Let's go out to pizza.
Yeah. You want to see a dead body after we go out to pizza?
Really, and cool.
That's kind of where it ends. I mean, it unravels. Yeah. They get caught, obviously. And then we see a scene of them all together, in which I thought was kind of odd. That they were all together at one hearing, but we see that Suzanne, Sarah, what's her name? The pregnant one.
Lisa?
Yeah, there we go. Lisa. She's almost due, and she's going to name the child after Marty. Yeah.
Right.
Then we get like the classic scene thing at the end where it's like, oh, they were, this person was served this many years, and this person was served that many years. And that's it. The end. So now, let's go to our quick thoughts and notes of, did you like it?
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we go ahead and address the elephant in the room, and then we can go forward with, you know, our breakdown.
Sure. What's the elephant in the room?
The theme, the overrunning theme through the film of, I'm going to go ahead and call the theme, though. I want to make sure that we go ahead and say that these thoughts, you know, the thoughts, at least, that I want to be expressing are my own.
Oh, right. Yeah, disclaimer, our thoughts are our own, not our puppet overlords. So if you got any problem with that, it's kind of with us and not with ours. Not with and London MDL, nothing like that. It's ours.
And I'm going to go ahead and take the reins and say that I'm going to speak on behalf of the director here and say that his message or his theme would be along the lines of sexual either confusion or resistance in humans and the cycle that not being comfortable, the implications of the cycle and how the purpose would be to find a break in the cycle of the repression or confusion of this or provocation of sexual tendencies in humans.
Okay.
I don't know what if that makes sense.
When you mean that specifically, the sexual tendencies in humans, what do you specifically mean? Like, what character are you talking about all or characters. Thinking about? All the characters?
All of them. Yes, I would say all the characters. And then I would also say that the director is also, it like, some certain scenes were uncomfortable to watch. Mm-hmm. I would say much of it was uncomfortable to watch from a sexual standpoint, from just human to human standpoint. And I would say that he's confronting the audience with this as well.
With their sexuality? Or with
both.
Okay. All right. We'll get more into, because like one of the 5 points is about how it affects you. So I'd like to hear more of your thoughts in that section regarding this.
Okay.
So did you like it? Obviously, I mean, you've watched this how many times? 3 times?
I've watched this twice now.
Oh, twice now. Okay.
Yes.
Did you get anything on the second viewing?
The second viewing, I felt more comfortable with saying that, like, after I watched it the first time, I thought it was a masterpiece, okay? After I watched it the second time, I could see that, I'm starting to see that the director is not fully evolved in his thoughts on this. So he's coming at us with an amateur thought. And I think that may be what's causing everybody to not be on the same page. I don't know. I haven't gotten to my full conclusion yet.
Okay. Now with the director, because you're basing a lot of it on the director himself. Mm-hmm. I know that, like, to me, I feel like he has accomplished something like this a little bit better and a little bit clearer, actually in an earlier film with honestly the same actor, which was Apt Pupil. Kids? Oh, shit.
Oh. Did I? Oh, Apt Pupil, yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Did I fuck that one up? Was it Kids? I thought he did Apt Pupil.
The same actor was an Apt Pupil.
Sorry. You're right. It was.
No, I'm going to write them both down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kids was the same vein.
Yeah. He does a lot of teen exploitation films.
Teen drug exploitation.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I like it. Okay. It's kind of like, yeah.
I thought Apt Pupil was a little bit cleaner of, I think, what it was trying. This kind of was trying. I mean, it wasn't no drug references. There weren't any. But you're right. I forgot. There was Kids that he did. I feel like there was a lot of this kind of thing during this time. You know, we had our Wild sense. Things. We had our Cruel Intentions. We had, to a lesser extent, Disturbing Behavior, The Faculty, Go, Havoc, you know, American
Panic, too, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
The Othello one. That was kind of weird. You know, and Romeo and Juliet. It was all, like, teen, like you said, court, teen-sploitation with, like, white teens.
Yes, yeah.
Drug stuff and sex stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you, but you said the first time you thought it was a masterpiece, and then this time you were starting to see a little bit of maybe things that you would have liked to have seen differently.
I saw ways that I could make it better.
Okay.
And some of that would be removing things. Some of that would be adding things.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Court? Did you like it?
Yeah. It wasn't my favorite, honestly. I kind of hated it more than I liked it, but it was like, it made me think a lot. So I appreciate that aspect of it.
Okay, what did it make you think about?
Well, there's just a lot. I think it always is kind of weird for me when they have adults playing these teenagers, because then they have these teenagers doing all these sex scenes. So it's kind of like, they're just, I don't know, it's like a weird kind of like exploiting of teenagers, even though they're like adult actors.
You'd rather Jodie Foster it and actually do teen stuff.
No, but like, maybe not at all.
But like, teens are sexual.
Like, yeah, it just like feels weird like watching it. I don't know.
Oh yeah, it makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah,
for sure. But we have to recognize that this does happen.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it did technically.
Yeah, that's technically true. Yeah, I didn't know it was a true story until like halfway through, and I was like looking it up on the internet, and then apparently it's a true story.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that you liked or you didn't like about it? There's some of your notes that you're just like, I gotta talk about this.
The writing really kind of bothered me.
Oh, really? Because
some of the dialogue was weird. Like when Allie was talking to her mom when they were in the car, and she was like, oh, what would you do if you like just saw a kid die? And her mom was really weird about it. She was like, oh, what are you kids up to, blah blah blah.
That was and me not and
like, hey, why are you talking about like a murder
I felt the same dad like the whole time that he was talking to Bobby, because it was just always like, dude, tell your kid to put on pants, you know?
Yeah, for
like,
real,
dude, put your pants on. I can talk to you about piano lessons, you know, it just
that's one of the parts I would have said, let's go ahead and change a little bit, because it's sending a message I don't think you want to send.
Message
like that his father like it either had to do like there's some sort of sexual going on between the father and the son that's starting to become accepted, either or they're just complete. I mean, it could be that they're completely comfortable with this, but on like an emotional level. But I think that could have been shown a different way on camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like they also tried to use the dad's character as like a reason why Bobby behaved that way. But like, more than anything, he was just kind of telling him not to hang out with Marty because Marty's a loser. And then he was like, I signed you up for piano lessons. I don't know. If they had a terrible relationship then in real life, then the movie didn't really depict that.
No, it was like the softest terrible relationship I've ever seen. Same with like, if you're going to go for the whole repressed gay, you know, it was like, nothing that was like completely and rigid and stern. He was like, I don't want you hanging around with that asshole. And I'm like, I agree. And he's like, you got piano lessons. I'm like, oh, that's a nice thing. Good job.
Yeah, like, oh, cool.
I have no problem with this. His dad's going out? Here's $5. I'm nice dad.
And did you guys catch that the director actually played in the movie as the kid who actually swung the bat? His father was
the hitman
director. Yeah. The gangster guy.
The one the one that said, tell her you're right.
Tell her you're right. Yeah.
And then hang up.
I was like, oh, that's badass, dude. But
he did have the best line.
Yeah, that was good.
He was like, that's mine. That's mine. Nobody touch it. Well, I got some feelings about this. So just tell me when I can open my box.
All right, hold on. The dad of Bobby.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering if we were trying to be
Iranian,
that because the father was so soft with his son, potentially accepting of his son, that we have reason for his violent tendencies. I wonder if that's what he's trying to say. I mean, I don't know.
He wasn't really like super lenient with him either, though.
Right.
Yeah.
He was just kind of a ground dad.
Yeah, he was like strict, but like they never showed him like beating him or anything.
Or like even verbally, you know, you got to do this. He was like, I'm going to set up this, you know, nice thing for you. You're going to, you know, I think if the kid really pushed like, dad, I want to be a lawyer, he'd be like, okay, you know, as long as you're doing something.
Yeah.
As long as you're not surfing.
I was like, yeah. As long as you're not on that damn dirty board.
All right, box, open up.
Okay. Uh-oh. This meeting will end in 10 minutes. Upgrade now to do the 10.
A fly landed in my coffee, guys.
Oh, no. Eat it. Just kidding. Or don't.
It's protein. All right. I think I did whatever I was supposed to do.
Okay.
I don't know. It says I can, but then it doesn't tell me I can. Anyway. All right. I'm just going. All right. Here I go. Okay. Did I like this? No. So I think Clark started all of this. Just the trope of white people doing things and talking about things, which again was fine for Clerks. I liked that mostly. This was really about Gen Xers, and I felt like it was a pretty piss poor representation of them, because again, they were kind of dubbed as like being slackers or cynical and disaffected by everything around them, which these kids certainly were, especially with growing up with the cultural influences of music like grunge, but especially in this case, it was hip-hop music. And let's see.
Eminem specifically was in there.
Eminem specifically.
Yeah, lots of Eminem.
Especially in 1990, Time Magazine published an article about the 20-year-olds as aimless and unfocused. A lot of times they were just portrayed as meandering, self-involved, and just apathetic towards everything. And I feel like this was a huge push in that direction too. I feel like it was taking that from other movies and saying, let's hit this hard. Let's go hard with this. So it was against, I believe, Gen Xers, but that's not like my biggest like pushes on this. One of my biggest issues with this is the gay rage trope, and I hate it. It's basically to the built up anger from being closeted about your like homosexuality. Some other examples are like in Glee, Queer as Folk, ironically, American Beauty, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I could go on and on, but it's really frustrating about that. I know a lot of people could turn to like the studies that show, oh, well, a lot of people who are homophobic are also, you know, gay, but we still don't know what that means. There was a really good article in Psychology Today by Jesse Marzi. He said the underlying idea that some degree of homophobia is actually explained by the homophobes in question trying to deny their own homosexual urges remains somewhat popular speculation. It roots as far back as Freud, and I've already discussed in one piece of more modern research on the idea from the mid-90s. This homosexual repression hypothesis is also a subplot in one of my favorite movies, American Beauty. So we see this a lot where it's taken to, again, like this extreme of and especially in the late 90s and early 2000s, where it is seen as, it's just a ticking time bomb. You know, they're going to take out their frustrations and anger because they can't super be gay. And I find that is an old trope, an ugly trope, and take it from there. Okay, last part. White people. This was, again, going back to the Gen X's. I'm trying to be as fast as I can. going back to the Gen X's in the hip hop, because this was primarily scored by hip hop music and was only white kids, white suburban kids that had,
I wrote about that too.
Yes. That had good homes and families and jobs and all this shit and drugs and money for drugs and all these things that, but again, they're obsessed with this kind of gangsta culture. Killing people and, you know, things like that. So a couple of things here that I got from Delilah Friedler in Medium.com. She's talking about a 1998 spin writer, Charles Aaron, published What the White Boy Means When He Says Yo. Basically, he predicted that white people's embrace of hip hop could spark a national awakening on race. But unfortunately, the economic gulf between blacks and whites is worse than it was in 1998 today. And the basically war on Black lives still matters. And really some people have been changed by hip hop, but for many, it just remains an aesthetic. It's the shit you bump to when you're trying to turn up. A portion of today's wardens and cops must have grown up liking NWA. So it's just an aesthetic. It's fake. It's nothing. And then in Ethan Hines' article, Why Do Suburban Kids Like Gangster Rap? He says, gangster rap is a fantasy of mostly masculine power, fighting danger, drinking and smoking pot at will, getting laid effortlessly, defying authority, getting rich without being chained to a desk. And this is everything that this movie is. This is killing somebody. This is drinking and smoking and fucking and being thin and pretty and young and white. And I feel like it's kind of, in a way, dangerous. Last one. That I got. This is from Jason Rodriguez's Colorblind Ideology and Cultural Appropriation in Hip Hop. It's talking about colorblind ideology. It's basically a set of ideas that are used in ways to deny the reality of inequality. So basically like, oh, you know, I don't see race. But that's basically to disconnect race from power relations and all inequality in racial discourses that are embedded. I'm kind of reading from his thing here.
Hold on. I think we need to do a two-part.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we do.
Because you're presenting us with a lot of information, and I want to be able to refute respectively with my own information. You know that I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do a two-parter. It's just, I guess when it comes to the bottom line, I found this offensive.
Okay. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Not very good, but.
You're right. It was a lot to throw. I didn't expect it to bring out all that, but once I got going, I was like, man, that fucking thing too. And and that thing too. So you're right. It should be a two, maybe three-parter. I don't know.
Yeah, because my just a one sentence refute would be the only thing I completely agree with you 100% on is that this film could potentially be dangerous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should probably then wait to call it art then, because we have to, we have so much we have to get into and we have so much that we have to do, which is okay with me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like so much to unpack from this
so,
movie.
So, Court, you're going to be our... <We've> stolen you. You are now stolen by us.
And yay.
Forced to go through the backs and forth. So,
I'm excited.
Good. I'm infuriated still, but you know, I'm driven. Yeah. I'm driven. And again, I want to thank Pars too, because I'm not saying, you know, oh, I'm infuriated at Pars, you know, good to have these things, and it's good to have these things that we can talk about and that we can share and that we can disagree or discuss, and because that grows us as people and that grows us as artists. And
definitely.
That is super essential to what we do every day as human beings and as what we do. So I just want to say thank you to Pars. Thank you to Court. And unfortunately, in the middle of that is when we are cut off at the end. So that's the bad news. But the good news is that this is just part one of three as we take a deeper dive into Bully with our pal Court. So be on the lookout for parts 2 and 3 coming up soon. In the meantime, you can check out the articles and studies that I mentioned in this episode, if you so choose. We have Time Magazine's 1990 article, Living, Proceed with Caution by David M. Gross and Sophronia Scott. And then we have Psychology Today's 2016 article, Homophobia Isn't Repressed Homosexuality by Jesse Marchuk. And that's Marczyk. And then I have Medium.com's 2018 article, Dear White Kids, Hip Hop Isn't About Us, by Delilah Frielder. I'm so sorry, Delilah, if I said that wrong. In this article, they also mention that there's a Spin article from 1998 called What the White Boy Means When He Says Yo, by Charles Aaron. And then we have a 2013 article from Professor Ethan Hein, which is H-E-I-N. Why do suburban white kids like gangsta rap? And then the very last one that I have for this episode was Jason Rodriguez's 2013 study, which is Colorblind Ideology and Cultural Appropriation in Hip Hop. So I suggest checking those out if you like. I also suggest checking us out at Haunted MTL as we dabble in podcasts and are predominantly writers and interviewers and collaborators. So thanks for listening to this podcast. Keep it creepy and keep it classy. Oh, my God.